Welcome back to the Bengals Beat podcast. It is week two, and I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host, Charlie Goldsmith. And Charlie and I have both now had a couple of days to go back, watch the Bengals' exciting win over the Vikings, in case you missed it, an overtime thriller at Paul Brown Stadium on Sunday. So, Charlie, let's just kick this episode off before we get into our Bears preview, talking about our final thoughts about the Vikings. So what stood out to you when you went back and rewatched the game?
The biggest thing, I think you have to start with the offense and specifically how the pieces all fit together. On Sunday, Joe Mixon made a point about how after the deep ball to Chase that we've all seen from the end of the first half, they were just playing the run differently. After a few other plays where Burrow was able to read the defense, hold on to the ball for an extra second, and find Ja'Marr Chase on one and T. Higgins on another play for a big pickup, the Vikings defense had to respond and defend the Bengals wide receivers differently from there out. The Bengals, again, we've talked about the problems they've posed, but you saw that on a tangible adjustment level basis. And what stood out to me was how the Bengals were able to adjust to the adjustments. Like I said, after the deep ball to Chase, finding Mixon and making him extremely productive, after they recognized the Vikings corners were giving the receivers too much space, the Bengals receivers taking advantage of those matchups, following the Vikings adjustment, Burrow finding open space continuously, and then an overall solid game for the offensive line. You know, we've talked so much about the Bengals offense, and if I were to grade it week one, it'd be an A- or an A, and that was just reinforced the more I've thought about what happened on Sunday.
And what would you grade the defense's performance?
Yeah, probably a B or B minus. I give them so much credit for limiting Dalvin Cook the way they did. But the overall question, and we'll preview the Bears in a minute, they come in with Allen Robinson, who for my money is an elite receiver in the NFL. But there were too many moments where, say, Adam Thielen specifically was able to get one-on-one coverage with a guy like Eli Apple. That was kind of the big pickup they made to get into field goal range in the fourth quarter. That was obviously how the Vikings scored in the second quarter. On that play one-on-one against Eli Apple. I still have questions about the depth and the overall productivity from the guys behind Chidobe Awuzie in the secondary and pass coverage. But again, it is a significant accomplishment holding Dalvin Cook. That's something that has to continue against some of the running backs the Bengals will face going forward.
When I looked at the game again, offensively, the main thing that stood out, and we did not talk about it much because his stats weren't, you know, off the charts, is T. Higgins. He was so important for the Bengals in this game. That drive that kind of set up the Ja'Marr Chase 50-yard field goal, T. Higgins was doing work prior to that. And I think what he can do in terms of draw attention from opposing defenses is going to be huge. I thought he had a very good game, and that's coming into a game where Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow and even defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo said they all thought T was going to have a breakout season. And even though his numbers wouldn't necessarily say it, he was vitally important to the success the Bengals had on offense. So that really stood out to me when I went back and rewatched it for a second time. And also, just as I wrote last night, Joe Mixon's role in this offense, and as you just mentioned, the Chase touchdown kind of opening things up for Joe Mixon. But anytime you rush for over 100 yards in the NFL, that is extremely hard to do, and he completely outperformed Dalvin Cook. And we spent so much time talking about Dalvin Cook heading into the game, and it was actually Joe Mixon who completely outperformed him. And if he's able to run like that, where he's able to get some five-yard runs, his longest run was 19 yards, but if he can just keep chipping away, it's going to make a decision really hard for a defensive coordinator if they're going to decide to sell out to stop the run, and what do the receivers do in that case, or the opposite. It's truly pick your poison, but you don't get that if you aren't having a running back who's producing like Joe Mixon. So I thought that was huge. And then defensively, I thought Mike Hilton had a really good game. You saw his presence, his physicality. That was something that really jumped out on tape to me after rewatching it. So just a couple of final thoughts from Charlie and I on that performance. A great way to kick things off. Now the Bengals hit the road to take on the Bears. They're headed to Soldier Field, a great place to play. I'm sure there'll probably be a ton of Bengals fans making this trip, as it's not that far. But this is another interesting matchup because the Bears are just, there's so many question marks at this point. they played on Sunday Night Football against the Rams and were exposed in front of a national audience in a lot of ways. I think so many people were talking about the Bears defense being formidable. And I'm not trying to take anything away from what Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay did in that week one performance. But the Bears defense, especially in the secondary, did not look as good.
So I think an interesting place to start looking at the Bears matchup specifically is with, of course, Andy Dalton. But kind of the other flip side of that is the Bengals defensive line, which has been, you know, rightfully highly praised. My perspective on the defensive line, specifically the defensive tackles, is I want to see it one more time. B.J. Hill had two sacks. Larry Ogunjobi can push the center back as well as anyone. That's how he played against Minnesota. And Josh Tupou and D.J. Reader had, I think, their two best games as pass rushers in a Bengals uniform. But again, I need to see it one more time. Andy Dalton, throughout his career, has, I think, been an underrated quarterback, but has struggled significantly when he faces pressure, especially from the interior. That is the way you beat Andy Dalton. And for, a completely revamped interior defensive line, I want to see how much those guys who I mentioned that the Bengals brought in to fix the issue of an interior pass rush are able to maybe break the game in the same way against a quarterback who, if you do that, you will win the game.
If there's anyone who knows Andy Dalton's weaknesses, it's going to be the Bengals, all of the staff members inside the building. So they're going to have a blueprint on how they're going to go about trying to beat Andy Dalton. But I think you bring up some really good points there. It will be very reassuring to see the Bengals' interior defensive line if they have another game like they did. Because like you said, anybody can do anything in a one-game sample size. So if B.J. Hill has another game like this, then we're really going to start talking about, was that a front office steal by the Bengals picking him up right as the roster deadline hit? But the Bears have, outside of Andy Dalton, I would say their strength is their run game. David Montgomery had over 100 rushing yards against the Rams. I thought he was the best player offensively for the Bears in that loss to the Rams in week one. And as you alluded to, Allen Robinson's a very good receiver. You don't hear his name as often, but that's solely, I think, because the Bears haven't had a quarterback who can, A, throw the ball deep or who's really been the guy there. But he's very well respected by a lot of opposing defensive players and their coaching staffs. Another player that I think the Bengals need to be careful and make sure that they have a plan for, especially in the red zone, is Jimmy Graham. Having covered the Falcons for 6 years, when Jimmy Graham was in New Orleans, he was a problem in the red zone, and he's just continued to be, although he's not playing as many snaps because he's getting up there in age, he did make a couple plays against the Rams where he's just such a big body that he can just go up and get the ball. So I will be interested to see how the Bengals match up with him.
Yeah, the Bears, I think more than any team in football, loves their tight ends. I think there was a point like this year or last year where they had like 7 tight ends on the roster. They've drafted all these tight ends, and it's an interesting point to bring up because with Jermaine Pratt and Von Bell specifically, we've talked all preseason about how their ability in pass coverage and the improvements that they've been stressing that they've made will be tested when the Bengals face teams that really scheme up their tight ends. You know, Von Bell mentioned his matchups against Evan Ingram and Mark Andrews last season. The Vikings didn't really have that guy. I didn't notice their tight end as much. But the Bears do. They scheme up their tight ends, and that's part of their identity, especially because they're not taking deep shots down the field with the offensive personnel they have now. So again, you know, Von Bell and Jermaine Pratt are two guys I see as improved. But while, you know, the Vikings game was a test for the Bengals outside corner and their interior defensive lineman, this is going to be a bigger, more tangible test for the Bengals' ability to cover tight ends.
Yep. And moving on to more Bears and Bengals stuff here, we have to talk about the Bears defensive line, because although they didn't look like the same defense in week one against the Rams, it's still Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn, and Akeem Hicks rushing the passer. And I don't care what they've done in week one, if you look at their career, those are three of the top pass rushers consistently over the last 8 years. Khalil Mack's name speaks for itself, but Robert Quinn and Akeem Hicks, those guys are very, very talented at their position. And we found out through Zach Taylor that of the 5 sacks the Bengals gave up on Joe Burrow, against the Vikings. Only two, he said, were on the offensive line, but they need to figure out their protection plan better because Chicago's defensive line is better than Minnesota's defensive line, no doubt.
Joe Burrow had an outstanding rookie season and then came back and had the best game of his career against the Vikings. But the one thing Joe Burrow noticeably struggled with last season was elite pass rushers. I always look back at the Ravens games and or the Ravens game and the Steelers games in particular as moments where their blitzes, again, their pressure off the edge and up the middle was just something that the Bengals offense at the time didn't have an answer for. That was actually the question I was most interested to see down the stretch, how Joe Burrow learned from those experiences in 2020. Well, now this will be the test, the first response we get to see from Joe in that area in 2021. The other game I like to play is this, and this will be new for you on the Bengals Beat Podcast 2020 edition. I always played the game, let's rank the Bengals offensive linemen.
Okay.
Because kind of like relievers in a bullpen, teams go against the guys they're going to see as the weakest. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you know and you have a pecking order because that kind of is going to dictate how opposing teams will game plan against you. So right now I'd have it as Jonah 1, Riley 2, Quentin Spain 3 because Trey Hopkins struggled against Minnesota, mm-hmm. Trey 4 and Xavier Suofilo 5. So that poses the question, you know, are Hicks and Mack going to line up a lot inside against guys like Suofilo and Hopkins at first? Or do they believe, you know, they've played against Riley Reiff so many times in the NFC North. Do they believe they have had enough success in that matchup to test a guy like him? Or do they want to see it for themselves, how much progress Jonah Williams has made coming off the 2020 season? We didn't get as many of those answers because, like, the Vikings, like, disguised a lot of blitzes, had a lot coming up the middle, really tested the Bengals' tight ends and running backs. When it comes down to the trenches in a team like the Bears with a more standard approach and those one-on-one matchups, who are they trying to target against? We're going to learn a lot about the Bengals' offensive line.
And it's worth bringing up that the running backs and tight ends need to be blocking better in pass protection. Samaje Perine had a couple misses that were well documented in that game, and it takes all of them if they're going to be able to execute on the top of their level. But I would agree with your rankings. Speaking of rankings, on the defensive side of the ball for the Bengals, and I think it's a mismatch they can take advantage of, is the Bears are down to, I don't know, maybe their fourth string left tackle. If they don't take advantage of that and kind of tee off on Andy Dalton on that side of the ball, I would be shocked, but they're probably going to give him a lot of help. But their rookie that they were hoping that was going to be the starter got injured, is going to miss the whole season. Then Peters leaves the Rams game, and then they go through their third string tight end gets injured. I mean, the third string left tackle they put in gets injured as well. And so I think now they're probably on their fourth string left tackle, which that's something the Bengals need to take advantage of, right?
That's very interesting. Like, the guy we haven't talked about enough, how they played against the Vikings, is Trey Hendrickson, mm-hmm. because he didn't get a sack, but he was consistently in the backfield, I would say, more than anyone else on the Bengals' offensive line. There were two or three plays in the fourth quarter and overtime where Hendrickson nearly just won the Bengals the game by nearly making an explosive play off the edge, but even though the Bengals' defensive line didn't finish those, they were still forcing Kirk Cousins to kind of scramble, messing with his wires, and really changing the entire offensive scheme they were trying to run. Trey Hendrickson was, I think, a game breaker, specifically in the fourth quarter and overtime. And while that didn't show up statistically against the Bears tackles, that will have more of an opportunity to show up. Because again, he is the signature free agent addition the Bengals have made and really bet on, betting that his production in New Orleans could translate in an entirely different, in terms of quality, defensive line room in Cincinnati. I was like quietly encouraged with what Hendrickson showed against the Vikings.
Well, I think before we finish this episode up with Jason Hoffman's overs and unders for week two, we saved the best for last. You have any idea what I'm going to say right now, talking about the Bears and the Bengals?
I do not.
Justin Fields.
Yeah.
We saved the best conversation for last. Justin Fields threw two passes in the week one game, and basically Matt Nagy has repeatedly said Andy Dalton is going to continue to be our starter. The Bears drafted Fields with the number 11 overall pick, traded up to get him. Their hope is that he is the quarterback of that team for a very long time. He's a born leader and winner. All of the Bengals fans listening to this podcast who are Ohio State fans, I'm sure know all about what Justin Fields did at Ohio State. But his athleticism and mobility gives the Bears something that they don't have in Andy Dalton and something that they haven't had in their offense in a while. But it's going to be interesting to see if they use him more because – and this is my opinion. If the Bears lose to the Bengals in week two – Justin Fields is starting in either week three or week four. I've read things that said Matt Nagy has said he's not gonna start him before week four. And Matt Nagy's coaching for his job at this point in Chicago. Justin Fields, and who knows, only Matt Nagy and his staff know the ins and outs of if they truly think this guy is ready. But I can tell you what, if they go down 0-2 and lose to the Bengals, Justin Fields starting in week three or week four, there's no question in my mind because at that point you need something to ignite your locker room. And Justin Fields, in my opinion, not having any real experience in the NFL gives you a better chance to win than Andy Dalton. I just truly believe in that. And I think that the Bengals need to be wary of a couple red zone packages that they're going to put Justin Fields in, and there'll be looks that the Bengals haven't seen because Justin Fields hasn't played in the NFL more than one game.
So I was planning to save this conversation for before the Bengals played the Ravens this season because just historically, the Bengals have really, really struggled against Lamar Jackson. I would extend that to all mobile quarterbacks. I remember like Carson Wentz making some big plays against him with his feet last season and Deshaun Watson doing the same. Because the Bengals don't invest in linebackers, they're 31st in the league in linebacker spending, that is an area that is a weakness because I think while the role of linebackers isn't what it used to be, against mobile quarterbacks, that still carries a significant difference. And Logan Wilson and Mike Hilton specifically, I know Hilton's a slot corner, but those two guys in those two roles have to become and grow into their stoppers against mobile quarterbacks. Kind of like how I'm trying to think, like Andre Iguodala is like the LeBron style. You know what I mean? NBA teams, you know, you have those matchups.
Crowder.
That guy off the bat. Excellent example, yes. Jay Crowder. And I kind of see similarities between...
Anytime you want to bring up LeBron, we can talk about it, Charlie.
I see similarities in between like a Jay Crowder and a Mike Hilton type in terms of, you know, not the highest recruited guy.
Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, well, Beverly's a different can of worms.
Okay.
But,
we can save that conversation for another time.
They need those guys, like Logan Wilson to an extent, but I think Mike Hilton specifically to be their stopper against mobile quarterbacks. I think that's such a huge reason of why they brought him in. And again, I was going to save that conversation for Ravens week, but if they put Justin Fields into specific situations, you know, Justin Fields was my second highest rated quarterback in the class. I think he's a great quarterback because he has the combination of speed and a big arm, which is kind of rare. Mm-hmm. And if they put him in, obviously the Bengals have to be prepared for that, and we'll see quickly how well prepared those two guys, Wilson and Hilton, are for that matchup.
It'll be so disheartening if this is the game that Justin Fields takes over and has a big game.
Well,
and
so
the Bengals can't let them be the opponent that Justin Fields shows out for.
That's exactly what happened with Lamar Jackson.
Oh.
So that is something we'll have to keep our eye on.
Okay, yeah, well, that'll be probably continue to be one of the biggest storylines surrounding the Bears. And obviously, it'll be interesting to see how much he plays against the Bengals on Sunday because we know he is going to see time. If Matt Nagy's putting him in week one against the Rams, he's definitely going to continue that trend and continue to give his rookie some reps. So we'll see how much he plays and if he's able to be effective against the Bengals defense. It'll definitely be one of the main storylines for this game. Well, that's it for Charlie and I getting you set for the Bengals' first road game against the Bears on Sunday at Soldier Field. Like we did last week, we will be back with our post-game reactions immediately following the game. So make sure you tune in right there. Well, you've heard Charlie and I break down the Bengals-Bears game, but we wanted to bring in someone who knows a lot more about the Chicago Bears than we do to give you some insight as to what's going on in Chicago, and that is ESPN's Michelle Steele, who I am super excited to have on this podcast. She does great work for ESPN. She's pretty much the queen of Chicago, in my opinion. So, Michelle, thanks so much for joining us, and I guess let's just start with the Bears are coming off of a disappointing performance in primetime football. And as someone who's very well connected in Chicago and has been there covering the team, what is the mood and what's the mindset in Chicago right now?
First of all, let me say that when you're the queen of Chicago, you still do not get as much deep dish pizza and hot dogs and whatever else Chicago culinary scene is known for out here. So hint, hint to any advertisers out there, any sponsors. I'm definitely open to those opportunities. But, you know, going back to your original question about what the feeling in Chicago right now, it's a little bit apoplectic, if I can use an SAT word. People are have a little bit of their mouths agape at this point after that week one, really trouncing, let's call it what it is, right, by Matthew Stafford and the Rams. And remember, this is a Bears team that actually has a solid record against Matthew Stafford, but that's him with the Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford and his arm and Sean McVay are a very different situation, clearly, for this Bears defense. They allowed him 3 touchdowns. He had his career best, I think 156 was his passer rating, which is, by the way, he's been in the league a long time. He made those levels. That was the best of his career. They gave up, this defense gave up 321 passing yards. I mean, this is an opponent you'd think that they were just seeing for the very first time and had zero familiarity with. So people were expecting, look, nobody was under the impression that this was an elite defense that we saw, you know, in 2018 under Fangio and, you know, still pretty good under Pagano. But people thought it would be a good defense that would keep us in the game. Instead, the Bears, whenever the offense would pull within a score, the very next play, it felt like the defense would be giving up a huge play, a huge score. So this is really like the tables are turned. Obviously, the quarterback conversation is one that is still raging here in Chicago, and we'll get to that. But I think what shocked people the most about that game on Sunday night was the fact that the defense did not step up like they normally do.
Yeah, there were tons of blown assignments, it looks like, all over the field. It was very questionable performance for a Chicago Bears team that's known for
the very first drive.
Yeah, they're known for their defensive play. And I know they've lost some pieces, Kyle Fuller. They've lost some pieces in the secondary, but they still have the same formidable defensive line with Akeem Hicks, Robert Quinn, and Khalil Mack. And it just was very head-scratching what was going on with the Chicago Bears defense. So
yeah, and really quickly, Kelsey, I want to say it was fundamentals that they were missing out there. You know, you mentioned Kyle Fuller. It would have been great to have Kyle Fuller out there in the secondary on Sunday night. Kyle Fuller actually did a good job for the Giants, but the Bears don't have the money to pay clearly kind of the caliber of safeties that they need out there. You know, I mentioned that first drive that the Rams had. Van Jefferson isn't even touched when he's down, you know? Yeah, and reporters, I mean, a credit to a lot of the beat writers in the press box on Monday morning or Monday afternoon, they held Matt Nagy's feet to the fire. You know, it is an inexcusable mistake that anybody in high school would know. And an NFL player should instinctively touch a guy when he's down. But that didn't happen. So Sean Desai, the defensive coordinator, and Matt Nagy, both, I don't want to say they're in the hot seat, but maybe it's getting warm.
Yeah, and for Matt Nagy to say, yeah, we're going to use it as a learning experience was definitely questionable.
That's something they should have learned in high school.
Exactly, True. To say the least. So let's talk, we just talked about the defense a little bit. Let's talk about the offense, and we'll save the Justin Fields conversation for last. Offensively, what do you think the Bears' strength is with Andy Dalton as the quarterback that the Bengals might need to have a game plan for in terms of they have to stop this to win, that the Bears have done well, whether it's been in training camp or if you've seen things in preseason games?
Well, there's no question they're going to have to stack the box against David Montgomery. That was, without a doubt, the strength of the Bears offense on Sunday night. He hit the century mark, went a little bit beyond that. I believe that he rushed for a touchdown as well on Sunday night. He was fully half of the Bears' 14 points. Justin Fields also rushed for a touchdown as well. But I think that that is the person that the Bengals are going to have to prepare for. I would like to say Allen Robinson, you know, he is the number one receiver on this team and certainly has been the best offensive playmaker on this team during his career in Chicago. But Andy Dalton, I've watched him all throughout the preseason, obviously Sunday night. He has not found a rhythm on this offense. And I'm not sure that pulling him out in the middle of drives and putting in Justin Fields, as much as fans want to see that, and certainly Justin Fields was the better quarterback, you know, obviously small sample size. He only got 5 snaps. I know that fans want to see Justin Fields as much as possible. The question is how is Matt Nagy really managing this quarterback shuffle? Does it do Andy Fields any favors to pull him out? I mean, let's talk about that opening drive. To pull him out in the middle of that drive in the red zone, and then on the very next play, you get a false start, and then he throws an interception. So after Fields came in for that one snap. So, you know, I'm not sure it's doing anybody any favors. It certainly doesn't appear to be helping the offense. I think the run game is clearly the strength, and Andy Dalton is under real pressure here to find a way to get a rhythm in this offense, because I've watched every snap and he has not found it yet.
Yeah, well, you led us into the last thing I wanted to talk with you about, and that is we saw a very small sample size of Justin Fields in the Bears offense in the week one game. Do you anticipate seeing more Justin Fields in the Chicago Bears offense in week two?
Yeah, you know, so Matt Nagy really wasn't committing to more. I will say that in the media room where they do the press conferences for the Bears, you know, when he was asked if the team would sprinkle in Justin Fields a little bit more beyond the 5 snaps that he got Sunday night, you know, he was like, nah, I don't know. We'll just have to see. He was kind of smiling as he said it. So if you're the kind of person that likes to read body language, and I will say Matt Nagy, you know, he keeps some cards close to the vest, but not always. I think that's a little bit of an indication that we'll see Justin Fields a little bit more. It is kind of interesting to see that Andy Dalton is going to be playing his former team. So we'll see how that kind of factors into everything. Maybe they want to give Andy Dalton more of a chance, you know, the Andy Dalton quote unquote revenge game. But, you know, Nagy is really sticking overall to the Bears timeline. We're not going to see Justin Fields start on Sunday. We're not going to see Justin Fields, I think, for much more than the 5 snaps that he had on Sunday night. I think this is still Andy Dalton's team. And I use that real like in quotes right now, because he knows that he has an expiration date here. But I think this is still Andy Dalton's game. And I think that he has a lot to prove, because the pressure in and out of the Bears facility is growing louder and louder to get Justin Fields out there as the full-time starter. But Matt Nagy, got to tell you, he's stubborn. Like, he is sticking to his guns on the timeline. And they're going to have Andy Dalton. You know, I don't know what assurances were made in the offseason, but Andy Dalton is the starter on this team, and we'll see when Justin Fields starts. I think that based on what we've seen so far, we see Justin Fields as a full-time starter sooner, certainly rather than later.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that timeline is. And, you know, as you said, the noise is certainly loud around this game. It's also interesting because a lot of questions about can the Bengals replicate the type of game they had in week one against Minnesota, or if that was just kind of a fluke game. So it's an interesting game for a lot of reasons, and one I'm looking forward to heading to Chicago to cover. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to the rest of your day. And will you be at the game on Sunday?
I'm actually going to be heading to Pittsburgh. I'm going to be doing Raiders Steelers, and based off of Monday night, we'll see if we'll get as wild a finish as we did on Monday night. But no, I'm looking forward to that game. I'm going to be back in Chicago because we get our assignments every week. I'm going to be back in Chicago. I think I would target going back to, you know, when I talked about maybe seeing Justin Fields as a full-time starter. I have a feeling I'll be in Chicago week 4. Okay. Bears Lions. So maybe keep an eye on that one.
Heard it here first on Bengals Beat Podcast. Thanks, Michelle.
You bet. Thank you.
And now for the segment we know you've all been waiting for. We got a lot of great feedback about your segment. Jason Hoffman is here to recap his thoughts on week 1 and give you his upcoming thoughts on week 2 in terms of his overs, unders, games to keep an eye on. Jason, what do you got for us this week?
Oh, what a week 1, Kelsey.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with listeners of this program. This segment, I should say, if they paid attention, would have been 4-0 last week because you would have had –
humble brag right there.
You would have had the Bengals winning outright or covering, whichever you chose. You would have had the Browns covering at Kansas City, even though on my personal ticket I lost because I took a money line. It was a plus 160. What was I going to do? And then you also had the Eagles covering at the Falcons, which turned out to be a blowout. Crazy game. And then on Monday night, that crazy game, Raiders plus the 4.5 on my personal ticket. If you follow me on Twitter, at @jhoffandcincy, Cincy with a Y, Raiders won outright, turned into quite the week for me. So on my personal ticket, I went 3-1. Listeners, if they took my spreads, went 4-0. And we're steamrolling into week 2, and I in no way, shape, or form expect that to happen again this week.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up because I think that shows the legitimacy and why people should – just another reason of why people should tune into this podcast because 4-0, that's the real deal right there.
I don't bet every game for a reason. I pick the ones that I think we have an edge in, and this week we hope to be as successful, so I'll roll into those now.
All right. Hit us with it.
Let's start Thursday night. The Washington football team with Tyler – Menicky?
No, Heinicke.
Heinicke.
Meinicke. Taylor.
Meinicke mufflers. Yes. Yeah, Taylor. Sorry. That shows you how much
but, yes, that says a lot right there.
Yeah, yeah. However, defense that suffered the wrath of Justin Herbert last week, but should be solid, facing the O'Danny boys, New York Giants, that looked
– yikes.
Yikes, yes. So I'm going to take the Washington football team minus 3.5.
Okay.
Despite the fact that I completely botched the quarterback's name, I think they can win a really ugly 17-10 type game.
Okay.
Moving on, Cleveland Brownies. Last week, thank God for the points. Again, I lost on my personal ticket thinking they would actually beat Patrick Mahomes. So this week, they're hosting the Houston Fighting Tyrod Taylors. And Houston, although they got it over on Jacksonville week 1, which looked like a in-between college and NFL team,
yeah,
as you'd expect.
A double yikes to what's going on in Jacksonville right now.
Yeah, but as you'd expect, coach who has zero NFL experience with a quarterback who, in my opinion, had been completely overrated for the last 3 years.
Ooh.
But we can say that for another time.
Feel.
Houston is going into Cleveland. I like Tyrod Taylor. I feel bad that he's never gotten a true chance without injury to be a starter in the league, but I don't see Houston keeping this game close at all. The number right now is 11.5. I will take it all the way up to 14.
Wow.
And I might even go at 14. I think the Browns can win this game by 17, okay. 20 possibly. Come back. Let's move a little east into the Midwest here. The hardcore Midwest. We're going to go to the Chicago Bears hosting the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, I'm intrigued. What do you got?
All right. So as I wrote today on Cincinnati.com in my picks column, I've already had two people who I consider way smarter than me on betting call me or text me and say this is the sucker line of the week. Meaning Bengals getting 2.5 points is meant to suck in people who will overreact to that win against the Vikings.
Yes.
They're going to lose by more than a field goal. Andy Dalton blew him out last year, yada, yada, yada. So call me a sucker. Put a big old sticker on my chest because I think the Bengals win this game going away. That Bears defense
looked
– I don't know.
It didn't look like the same Bears defense. Charlie and I just talked about that for a while. I don't know what was going on.
And I don't know how you turn that around in 1 week.
No.
Conversely, their offensive line looked as built, which is worse than the Bengals. Mm-hmm. I don't see.
And you didn't know who the Washington football team quarterback's name was. Do you know who the Bears starting left tackle is going to be? Because they're on their fourth string. Oh, by the way.
No. Willie Anderson, the great Willie Anderson, had joked on Twitter last week that he was going to rotate in and play some snaps for the Bengals on Sunday against the Vikings. Yeah. They might as well give him a call. So I like the Bengals plus 2.5. And as a matter of fact, I like him at plus 122 to win outright.
Okay.
I always say if you're going to bet a game that's under a field goal, you might as well take the extra money and bet them to win outright. So, yeah, I like that play, but take the points if you want to. And then last on our straight games of the week before we get to our home dog special, I have the Detroit Lions heading to Green Bay on Monday Night Football.
Don't tell me you think the Lions are going to win this game.
I do not at all think the Lions are going to win this game.
Thank you.
I do think that when your head coach says that we're going to bite people's kneecaps off this year, that early in the season before too many players start quitting – you can cover 10.5 points.
Okay.
So I'm going to take the Lions plus 10.5, same fashion they covered last week against the 49ers. End of the game, garbage time, whatever you want to call it. They sneak in a field goal touchdown, cover the 10.5 points.
Okay.
Not very confident about it, but I think that they can do it because I think Aaron Rodgers takes at least another week to get actually going again.
Yeah, he was – he did not look good.
That was rough.
Across the board, they did not look good, but, I mean, how can you ever – say that they're not going to turn it around.
I love that you said that because in sports betting, you talk about whether you like the board or you don't. All right. Home dog of the week segment.
Here we go.
Last week, listeners of this program went 2-0 because I told you Bengals were going to win, Raiders were going to win. And yeah, if you did that, you made some money. Conversely, I do not like the board this week for the home dog pick. So real quick, and again, all this is available on Cincinnati.com as well, but this is way more convenient while you're driving because you don't have to worry about getting in a wreck or doing something terrible, looking at your phone. So I'm going to run through real quick. Did not like the board for all the people that are underdogs at home, which is a lot this week. Miami hosting Buffalo. The Bills, I thought, were better than the Steelers last week.
Same.
In all phases of the game. They just lost. I don't see Miami winning. Jets versus New England. Mac Jones is going to have a coming out party. That defense is going to – I don't see the Jets scoring except for in garbage time. So that's a no. Jacksonville hosting Denver. Tell me when they look like an actual NFL team. Denver should steamroll them.
Tell us how you really feel.
Hey, I got to be honest here. The Panthers hosting New Orleans. Now, this was my first candidate when I looked at the games. We're going to get to that. Philadelphia hosting San Francisco. The Eagles due for a letdown after that big win in Atlanta.
Okay.
San Francisco is one of the top three, if not two teams in the NFC. No way. I don't think the Philly wins. Baltimore hosting KC. God, I hate betting against Lamar Jackson. The only player in the league I hate betting against more than him is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And Patrick Mahomes went into a way more healthier Baltimore last year that had some momentum and just ran him out of their own house. So that leads me to this. Can't bet against Mahomes, even though I really want to bet on Lamar because Baltimore is coming off a highly emotional loss.
Right.
And they're on a short week. So your home dog of the week, Bengals Beat podcast listeners, is the Carolina Panthers hosting the New Orleans Saints because two reasons. I think Carolina's offense can put up points, and I will bet against Jameis Winston having a repeat performance before I will ever bet against Patrick Mahomes losing when he's facing a wounded opponent that has injury issues and is coming off an emotional loss on a short week. So there we go. Carolina plus 160, depending on the book you're at. At New Orleans, they're currently 4-point dogs, I believe, 3.5. Take them outright, get the plus 160, and good luck to you. And as always, everything on here is strictly for fun. This is not professional betting advice. You're not paying us for it. And if you do have a problem or know somebody who has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And all lines are courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook, which does have a partnership with the USA Today Sports Network, of which we are a part. And our parent company, Gannett, may or may not make profits off of lines on Tipico Sportsbook. We have to advise you of all that. So.
All right,
what do you think? Where am I wrong?
My home dog might be, and I know you think the Bills are going to turn it around. I kind of think the Miami Dolphins might surprise people in that game, start the season 2-0.
I looked at that because
– And Bills Mafia will lose their minds.
They have a great defensive scheme, right? Mm-hmm. And that Miami coaching staff knows the Bills because they all Belichick disciples. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like that too. I just – For the life of me, watching Jameis Winston do that, I'm like, there's no way this happens again. Yes. Now watch, I'll look like a big dummy next week. But for now, that was my thought.
Yeah, I would say those two are the two, when you were reading them off, that really stood in my head as potential the home team could actually surprise and win there. But other than that, I think you're spot on with all the other ones. Jacksonville and New York, I still think they're way far away. So I agree with the New Orleans pick because Jameis Winston, I will be shocked if he's able to continue to play at that level. Plus, the Panthers have a pretty sneaky good defense, and Sam Darnold wasn't New York Jets Sam Darnold. So I guess that's level we're ranking Sam Darnold.
Yeah, they get creative on offense. They spread the ball around. They got that Joe Brady scheme rocking. Mm-hmm. I think they can win that game.
Okay. Well, I also like your pick about the Bengals with the Bears. I think that this is, like you said, don't overreact. But when you look at the Bears in that week one performance, it's hard to not pick the Bengals, right?
Yeah. If Matt Nagy is going to roll out randomly on a second or third down every other series, Justin Fields to come in and do some kind of RPO.
Not going to work.
You're wasting snaps on offense. Mm-hmm. Granted, you could change the tempo, but like the front seven of the Rams, while good, is not like 1985 Bears level.
Right.
And they were just blowing those plays up. Now, granted, Fields did get the touchdown, mm-hmm. but you can't, in my opinion, you can't do that because you're taking away, you're changing the rhythm of the offense mid game, mm-hmm. and you're taking away snaps that could have been used more efficiently for something that may or may not work. It's super high risk, super not low, but I think mid reward, mm-hmm. you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. So I was watching that Sunday night game and I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
This is dumb.
It's completely different than people like to compare it to when Sean Payton utilized Taysom Hill. It's completely different than that because nobody thought it wasn't Drew Brees' offense, and Taysom Hill wasn't, yes, he was doing things with his legs, but he wasn't a pure runner, kind of in the sense that Justin Fields is. It's a completely different style of offense when you put Justin Fields in and take Andy Dalton out. It's not the case when you do that with Taysom Hill and Drew Brees. And you know Taysom Hill's coming out the next play. You don't know in Chicago, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, looking forward to watching on Sunday. Thanks for having me. And again, Cincinnati.com. You can read that story if you want or listen to this. And then follow me on Twitter @JHoff in Cincy, CINCY.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.